Well, let's look at how David got into this fix. And I want to just introduce you to the 142nd Psalm. Now that I've told you what it says, I want to show you the steps leading up to this 142nd Psalm. And then I want to walk through it with you in four respects. The first thing is that usually cave times like this, like David's in, you know, he's actually hiding in a cave. He's actually, and we're going to see that in just a second, but everything's caving in on him. Usually, those kind of times follow great victories. So if something wonderful is happening in your life, get ready. Get ready. The testing is coming. And usually they follow, and cave times and times like David's in right now, literally hiding out in a cave or hiding out from his enemies, usually follows great victories. And it did. You remember the great victories that preceded this time? We've looked at them for the last 3 weeks. Number one, in 1 Samuel 17, David was the hero who had toppled Israel and God's number one villain of the hour, Goliath. And David lived to tell about it. And the whole nation started singing and clapping. If you ever heard the Jewish people sing and clap, it's amazing. And I can just see them all running around with their tambourines singing. Saul has killed his thousands, but David has killed his 10,000s. And the whole nation knew about it. Usually these kind of times usually follow great victories. 1 Samuel 19, which is recorded in Psalm 59, which we've already talked about, David was Mr. Brave who escaped an assassination attempt and lived to tell the whole world about it in Psalm 59. And that was another great victory. He escaped an assassination. He escaped the giant Goliath. Great victories. What we just talked about in Psalm 34, David was Mr. Clever who acted his way out of the presence of the commander of the dreadfully feared Philistine warriors and lived to tell about it in Psalm 34. I mean, this guy is a hero. In every sense of the word, he's almost invincible in war. He can single-handedly, with a little tiny strap and a couple of rocks, knock out a tank, Goliath. He can nearly survive anything, even an assassination attempt in his own house by his own father-in-law with all the soldiers. He can even march right into the courtroom of the Philistine warriors and march back out unscathed. Great victories are in his life. But turn to 1 Samuel 22 because I want you to see what happened. Back to 1 Samuel 22. And you won't understand Psalm 142 unless you see 1 Samuel 22, those first two verses. And that's what's so important about really looking deeply into the background of some of these psalms in David's life. Because it's only when we see what he was going through can we understand why he's saying what he's saying. And we have to understand, first of all, that these kind of times usually follow great victories in the life. It's kind of like God's refining to make sure that we don't think that those victories come from us. And in 1 Samuel 22, those first two verses introduce for us Psalm 142 and also Psalm 57. Psalm 142 is introduced most aptly by these two verses. So David departed from there. Where did he depart from? Well, if you notice that chapter 21, starting in verse 8, is all about going before Achish. Remember that Philistine warrior? And David marches right in there for refuge, and all of a sudden this court of this warrior say, wait a minute, isn't this the guy that everybody in all the newspapers and on the radio and everybody's singing he's killed 10,000 Philistines? We're Philistines. And old Achish says, my, this guy's right here. And David got scared and he backs out. And after that great kind of exit, we find verse 1 of 1 Samuel 22. So David departed from there. He departed from Philistia and escaped to the cave of Adullam, just around Bethlehem, out in the wilderness, out in the what we would call desert, the Badlands. He sneaks from the coast, walks through over the hills, and comes to this very special cave. But he doesn't come alone. When his brothers and all his father's household heard of it, they went down there too. As if it wasn't bad enough to be hiding out for your life, to have all the family come tromping along. You know, you're trying to hide. They all come in the cave, but they're not enough. Look at verse 2. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt. Isn't that amazing? They ran up their MasterCards or whatever, and they went running down to the cave, and everyone who was discontented, and they gathered to him, and he became captain over them. Now there were about 400 men with him. Can you imagine being in a cave with 400 malcontents, family members, people that were in debt, people that were in distress? They were stressed out, and they came down to you. Well, that's the setting of Psalm 142, and turn back there, because we're going to close by looking at three more points. We saw, first of all, that Psalm 142 comes about because usually these kind of times of caving in or of hiding out usually follow great victories. And now we find David in Psalm 142 running for his life, caring for his family, and hosting all of these malcontents in a cave. What I've thought about is just what it must have smelled like in that cave. I mean, these people, if they were malcontent and in debt, they probably had no money to buy new clothes or Zest soap or whatever the current soap was. So I can just imagine hosting all these people. What an assignment. How'd he do? Well, if cave times are usually following times of great victory, then they're accompanied with great distress. And I want to look at that with you in this psalm. I want you to see, as David records the incredible distress that was upon him as he was in this time in his life, and see if you can relate to it. Verse 3 says, first of all, let me read it to you. Verse 3, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me. How do you know if you're getting into this time in life, when you're in a cave time in your life, you know, when you're hiding out, when all the malcontents are coming? Well, the first sign is your spirit is overwhelmed. Kind of like you get too many circuits going and it blows the fuse. Your spirit is overwhelmed. There are kind of some expressions that go along with this overwhelming in spirit. People start saying, oh, the roof is caving in on me, or everything is going wrong at once. Or you hear people say, it always happens to me. Or here's the familiar one. When the phone rings, they say, oh, not now. You know, like your mother-in-law is coming for a month or something like that. Or the doctor says, I have some bad news for you about your wife or about your children or about you. And there's just that looming, overwhelming in spirit. And that's the first great distress that accompanied David in this time. And then the next one is, at the end of verse 3, it says, thou didst know my path and the way where I walk, for they have, what? Hidden a trap for me. See what happens? You get into these times of great distress and your spirit gets overwhelmed, and all of a sudden you start feeling like they've hidden a trap for me. And you hear people saying these things like, they're all against me now. Or, I've been railroaded. Or, the one we've all heard, I've been framed, you know. They're just setting me up for this. And we start getting that feeling like there's a trap. And if I just take a wrong move, they're going to get me. But look at verse 4. Because here's the next great distress. Not only this overwhelming sense, our spirit dampened, and not only this wariness and fearfulness of the trap set. But look at verse 4. No one regards me. Do you see that right in the middle? Look to the right and see. For there is no one who regards me. And I can just hear David saying this out the door of the cave. You hear all this rustling and moaning in the background, all the poor people and all the malcontents and his family, and they're pushing around in the cave. And here's David standing at the cave mouth, looking out, wondering when Saul's going to figure out where he is. He says, I look to the right, I look to the left, I look all around, and no one cares for me. Here I've delivered Israel from all their enemies that I could. I've slain 10,000s of Philistines, the dreadful scourge on Israel. And now I'm running for my life, surrounded by this band of nobodies. And he says, nobody regards me. You ever get into that time in your life? Something goes wrong, and here's the kind of phrases we say, nobody even called. You ever said that? I didn't even get a card. You know you're getting into this time of life, or you say, well, I guess I'm a nobody. Nobody recognized me. We start feeling poor me. We sit around, and before long we say, I'm all alone. It's kind of like the Elijah syndrome, isn't it? Remember? He goes trotting off out into the wilderness, and he gets into the cave, and he says, I'm all alone. And one woman was chasing him. And the great mighty prophet that could call down fire from heaven runs and hides in a cave. And he wouldn't get out of that cave. You remember the story? And the great wind goes by and the fire goes by. And finally, a still small voice comes and says, Elijah, don't you know I'm with you? And also there's 7,000 that haven't bowed their knee to Baal. They're with you. Why are you getting the poor me syndrome? I'm all alone. Well, David continues. He really mirrors all the needs of our heart because he says, no one regards me. We looked at that. And there is no escape for me. Do you know that sinking feeling when you hear some words like these? I'm sorry, sir. You're too old for that position. You know, no escape. Or, I'm sorry, but the qualifications for this position require that you have a... And you realize that you'll never be able to meet those qualifications. Go back to school. Get that degree. You all of a sudden realize you're trapped and there's no escape. And you get that sense that it's a one-way trip to nowhere and you're never going to get out of the mess, out of the debt, out of the swirl. And you start feeling like David did. He said, there's no escape for me. I'm here. The whole nation must be against me. At least Saul and his soldiers are against me. The Philistines are against me. And I've got all these malcontents that are bugging me. And he said, here I am. And here's the bottom line. This is kind of the conclusion of the accompanying great distress that comes in these kind of times in our life. The very last phrase of verse 4, no one cares for my soul. I want to tell you, this is a marvelous point to get to. Because wait till you see the transition. When the roof had fallen in, when everybody was against him, when he had thought through that he was all alone, that there was no escape, that nobody cared about him, that traps were out there, it was a minefield, and his spirit was overwhelmed, we now come to the third marvelous facet of going through these cave times in our lives. The first one was remembering that they usually follow great victories. We immediately forget about the great victories, don't we? We forget about the great blessings. We forget about that hitherto the Lord hath provided and the Lord will provide. We just get down in the, what Bunyan called, the slough of despond, despair.